Welcome once again to the Lucky Mojo Movie Root Work Hour, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. I'm your announcer, Dr. Jeremy, in Seattle, Washington. And in just a moment, we'll be joined by our co-hosts, Conjure Man Ali of theconjureman.com in Mission Viejo, California, and guest co-host, Anuk of papanuk.com in Omaha, Nebraska. This week, we'll be joined by a special guest, Stuart Palm of stuartpalm.com, calling in from Hong Kong, bringing us today's topic of necromancy and mediumship. They will take your calls and offer advice to address, ameliorate, and remediate your questions and problems about love, money, career, and spiritual protection using traditional African-American folk magic practices of hoodoo, conjure, or root work as divined and prescribed by the greatest spiritual hoodooist of our time. You can learn a lot just by listening, but if you're selected from among those who have signed up at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and have called into the show, then you will be on the air and receive a free consultation. We'll be going to the phones in just a moment. But first, let's catch up with our co-hosts, Conjure Man Ali and Papa Newt. Conjure Man Ali?
Thanks for that lovely introduction, Dr. Jeremy. It's lovely to have you as an announcer. This is a kind of an interesting show with a lot of firsts. So bear with us. It's going to be quite exciting. We have Dr. Jeremy joining us as announcer and Papa Newt taking off his announcer hat and joining us as guest co-host. So lots of exciting things in store for us. I did comment, though, that we are very lopsided this episode in that we have no women on this particular call or show. So we'll have to bear or kind of survive and endure without the ameliorating presence of Miss Cat. She is away this week and we'll be back next week, so we look forward to having her. This is going to be a fun episode. We have an interesting topic dedicated to mediumship and necromancy, not something that we've really discussed before. We have talked about cemetery work, we've talked about the dead, but not quite yet in this angle. So it should be quite interesting. Before we dive into our topic, let's do a quick check-in to see how everyone's doing. In my neck of the woods, I've been busy cleaning, as I usually do when piles and piles of books start to get too big around me. I start to realize that it's time to clean and put them back on the shelf. So today has been a day of just kind of dusting, putting back books, realizing I had certain books that I didn't realize I had, and other instances of realizing I ordered two copies of something because I lost one. And then the other one kind of just shows up. So it's been a bit of a sort of book administration day, if you will. Lots of sort of cleaning up of my shelves, as well as cleaning of the altars. Altars pile up, as anyone who's done professional root work can tell you. They really pile up with wax and dust and incense ash and all sorts of things. And so they do require an occasional cleaning, and I usually do it around spring, but I started early this year around, so, you know, it was a nice little treat, but now the house smells wonderful and sparkling and spiritually uplifting, so it's been quite a productive and busy day. Let's check in with Papa Newt. Welcome, glad to have you as guest co-host, my
Thank
fellow
you.
Taurus. How are you doing?
You know, it's been quite busy here, and I understand the whole cleaning and also organizing has been my big task, especially this week with new tasks and adventures coming up, and I have fallen behind on getting back to my clients, so if you're listening, I will get back to you this week. But yeah, it's been good here in Omaha, just trying to get through the winter and
Yeah.
It seems to be the
cold
theme
here.
For Torin. Yeah, seems to be the theme for Torin, the cleaning and organizing right now, because I'm pretty sure Miss Cat was doing the exact same thing last week. So there's something definitely going on there, which is, it happens. It always lines up in that way. Glad to have you. This is going to be a really fun journey into a fun, fun topic. We have Stuart Palm joining us from Hong Kong, so we are entirely an international show. Very excited about that. Welcome, Stuart. Glad to have you join us.
Glad to be here. The future is good.
Yeah, this is your second time, I think, on the show.
Yeah.
So we're very glad to have you back. Last time we had a great time having a discussion. This time around, you brought us a really fascinating topic. But before we get into the topic, could you give our audience, for those that may have missed you the first time around, just a brief introduction into you and your practice, and what can they expect from you if they turn to you for reading or assistance?
So I live in Hong Kong, and I have a practice of hypnotherapy coaching, and in that practice I give readings and do root work and folk magic things, and so people come to me and they don't necessarily know that side all the time, and my studio is such that they would get the idea that there's more being offered than regular hypnosis stuff as possibilities, but I also get people who come to me directly for readings and stuff. So I there's a lot of variety in the clients that I have. In terms of what I do, usually I'm reading with cards as the oracle, but I also do scrying. And the reason I picked the theme today is because, and I'm sure this is true of anybody who gives reading, you get people who come who want to connect to lost loved ones and relatives all the time. And I don't advertise myself as a medium. I don't. I'm an extra large, actually. But I will work with them. And what I like to do is to give them ways and teach them ways that they can connect to those people themselves instead of giving them my experience of their loved ones. So that's kind of what I thought. Hey, let's talk about that because I'm fascinated.
Yeah.
By it, but I'm sure you also get those clients who want to. That's their chief concern.
Oh, absolutely.
The other reason
I
brought it up
is
that. Sorry, there's a lag, I think, and so you go ahead and talk.
No, please. You were finishing your thought.
Yeah. So the other reason that I brought that up is that I do live in Hong Kong. Which has some very interesting traditions of connecting to the dead. And so I'd be happy to talk about those and how fascinating and interesting they are and what's different about them.
Yeah, thank you. I think this is a fascinating topic and one that's really interesting, I think, to most people. So let's dive right in. I'll give a brief introduction and I'll turn this over to you, Stuart, and then we'll have Papa New jump in as well, and we'll have a free-flowing conversation about this. Now, the term mediumship is found within the tradition of hoodoo. Necromancy, slightly less so. Necromancy is more of a European term, but we can also use it in a sort of anthropological way to describe a certain magical technique, and that is communing with the dead in order to gain answers. That form of technology or spiritual technology is found within hoodoo, has a deep roots within the Congolese and West African tradition, and is an important part of what root workers do. Most people think of root work today and they think of Catholic saints, And certainly the saints have become very popular. Papa Newt is quite famous for his work with Catholic saints and several root workers. But the Catholic saints are actually much more popular online than they are kind of in the Southern tradition. Indeed, the kind of old tradition that you find in, say, Mississippi, found in Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Conjure, what you'll find is that people refer to God, the devil, and the dead. Those are the kind of three forces that people work with in order to achieve their ends or to receive insight, etc. And so the dead feature very prominently in hoodoo, and mediumship with the dead or necromancy with the dead is a common practice. Not, again, not always called that way. For example, my teacher, Mama Jay, never used the word necromancy ever, but she had an ancestor altar, and she would work with the ancestors, and she would ask questions of the ancestors. And the way that she read her tarot cards were through the intervention of the ancestors. And so the spirits of the dead are there, and a very important feature in the sort of divinatory practices, the practices of gaining insight. And there are many people who may not even ascribe to, say, hoodoo, but who are part of Black spiritual practices in America, who do have strong ancestral traditions, who know about leaving water for ancestors, who know about the family Bible, who know about creating connections with the dead. So there is a lot of sort of traditions here, both directly and intentionally magical, as well as those that we would consider folkloric or folk traditions that have been passed down. So we'll have a kind of a gamut conversation here. But when you say mediumship and necromancy, what are some of the methods, techniques that you use and that you prescribe to your clients, Stuart?
Well, when it comes to necromancy, I think the term makes it sound a lot darker somehow than I think the regular practice is. And in many ways, a lot of what I do involves necromancy because I do have ancestral guides that I connect to and that help me give a reading, that help me in most spiritual practices. There's different energies that I guide from, but I know that there always are ancestors involved to some degree. I always have that with me. And if I'm going to connect or look at other spirit energies, I'm doing that not from my own energy. I'm doing that through my ancestors. And I think that's a quite common practice with all people, whether they realize it or not, who are reading in some way. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So calling it necromancy is maybe not exactly the right, complete right term, but I think that it relates in that sense. When I was very young, my first steps into this world were through gathering around a Ouija board and experiencing that a connection, and I think that has stayed with me. When I have a book that I wrote on the pendulum, and when I do, there's a little practice in there where you ask, who's guiding your pendulum? Where's that coming from? And a strong connection when I do that little test is that it's my aunt and my grandmother are part of that connection. So that is one of the, I guess it's one of the arms of the way that I read. In terms of mediumship, I have always felt uncomfortable, although fascinated by, people who, being the guy who is going to commune with your ancestors and tell you exactly what they're saying and give you guidance through them. I feel it's much more empowering for people to for them to connect with their own ancestors. And so what I do is I take them through a ritual, which I'm going to explain in a little bit, where they have a question answered or create a conversation through their own dream state with their own ancestors so that they can have the closure they're looking for, so they can have the question that they have on their mind that they didn't get to ask or that they're worried about addressed and often answered. Because I think that's what people come for. I think that's why they have what they're doing. They want to know, you know, is it okay? Are we okay? That's what they want. Are we good?
Yeah, this is a really, I think you bring up a really important point that part of this is about empowering the client themselves, not just about granting answers in a sort of slot machine fashion, but giving them the tools they need in order to make that connection, in order to build that resonance, in order to feel empowered. And I think that that is very true. I do know that there is, I think particularly when it comes to mediumship, I tell clients and students of mine that when it comes to psychic ability, people tend to fall into two sort of camps with a select few that are kind of in the middle. There are those that are sort of analytic readers. And analytic readers do really well with things like astrology. These are people who like really well-worn paths and can kind of stick to it. And then there are those that are subjective readers or interpretive readers. And these are people that are storytellers by nature. They can read tea leaves. Mm-hmm. They can read cards. They can read anything. I used to joke that, casting colored paper clips, you could read those.
Totally.
And then there are some people, and there are people that kind of fall in the middle. Miss Cat is one of them. I'm one of those that can kind of blend between the two, but it is difficult. And most people tend to fall into one or the other. And mediumship is one that is very clearly on the interpretive side. It requires an element of intuition. It requires an element of trust of the self and trust of spirit that it can be somewhat tricky to develop. That said, it is a skill. You may have an aptitude for it, or you may lack an aptitude for it, but everyone can develop some skill in it. So Papa Newt, I wanted to bring you into this. Mm-hmm. What are some ways that you help to develop the ability of mediumship, which is, we should interestingly point out too, is that when we talk about necromancy and we talk about, ancestors, that's technically what the saints are as well, the ancestors mm-hmm. of the church. And so there is a built-in tradition of recognizing the power of ancestors already within even mainstream religion and folk religion that I think is quite powerful.
Right, and it's not even really recognized. I was raised just like, oh, you can pray to St. Anthony. I watched my mom pray to St. Anthony and saw miracles happen. Mm-hmm. So it's like, gosh, you know, Catholics were just a bunch of necromancers back in the day, really, except for Constantine, his mom. Yet, you know, it's like, she can't be in those catacombs. No, let's change stuff. So, but it is interesting working with the spirits and the mediumship. Now, I've been slowly just kind of experimenting with mediumship, but I do find that just like anything that is a spiritual, of anything of practice, you do need to cultivate. And the biggest thing is, you know, the quieting of your mind. Now, if you partake in various forms of meditation or centering prayers or anything along those lines are key factors to start to tune into those subtler messages that are present within the space around you. And And so I tell anybody that gets started to start doing that. Now, I read bones. I don't normally read the bones when I'm on the radio show because I find it a little hard to describe. But, you know, I do find that there is a little level of mediumship because sometimes I get impressions or I hear something and I'll just bring it up and it's, like, spot on. I even have had one time reading at the store people that came to me and wanted me to do mediumship on one of their family members with the bones. It's like, well, okay, I've never done it before. Let's give it a go.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit it. The person committed suicide. That was an intense experience, and I've had my own experience with a friend committed suicide in college. So I was like, okay, we're not going to do that again. Later that week, another person wanted to do the same thing, and another person that was committed suicide. So I was like, I'm not going to do this because I'm not myself ready for that intense level, because when you do mediumship, those the spirits of the dead have their stories, a wide variety of stories, and it
takes a lot out of you.
Oh yes, I've watched a medium that has come to a store here in Omaha, and I watch them, and it's like I'll just watch them just above their head, and it looks like just when you look at a flame of a candle, and that just little weightiness that's above it, that's what's going on with him, and he's worn out by the end of they're done, and it's a lot of work.
And mediumship ranges too. This is something that we should mention is that they can. Particularly if you come at this from the African diasporic traditions, mediumship comes in a multitude of different ways. There's ways in which the dead are communing and you're kind of passing along messages. There are ways of creating a sort of space for them in which they're guides and helpers. And then there are examples of far more intense connections. There are, for example, possession practices that we find in Kardecian forms of spiritism. We find in the ATRs, the African traditional religions. And so mediumship has a sort of diverse experience, but all of it involves a very intense connection, and one that does need to be built over time and, I think, quite carefully. This is again, an area where it's important to be able to distinguish your voice from others, to have some sort of spiritual fortitude. And so my recommendation is always for clients is to start with the spirits you know. Don't just open up the door.
For sure.
Right? Don't just be like, you know what? I'm ready to be a medium. Spirits, come forward. Start with your ancestors. Start with the immediate dead. Start with the people you know you can have a conversation with or who have an interest in having a conversation with you. And most importantly, particularly within the Hoodoo tradition, the idea is to test the spirit. You test the spirit to ensure that you are not dealing with a trickster spirit or a dangerous spirit or a parasitic spirit. So those are the kind of the guidelines toward this. My question for you, Sue, is how would a client start to develop the ability to hear the spirits? Let's say they don't have the ability to hear or sense. What's a good practice, in addition to kind of quieting the mind, as Papa Newt mentioned, what's something that they can do to develop that skill and to start discerning between their voice and the spirit's voice?
Well, there are a lot of ways, but any practice that heightens your unconscious state, that opens your sort of gets past your what in hypnosis we call critical faculty, but the thing that allows you to go into the unconscious, that anything that gets you there easier is going to open you up to connecting to spirits and spirit and your own ancestors. Scrying for me was the doorway. Practicing scrying opened me up to seeing and experiencing way more than I expected. And through clients, I started to see that I could be correct on that. And I still didn't feel like, well, I'm going to go start doing mediumship work, but I saw that that was something that I had. I assume from my own experience that it's a possibility that everyone could attach to, but I don't know if that's right. And the clients that I have, some people have very strong experiences where they can intensely experience their ancestor that they're looking to connect with.
Mm-hmm.
Some people just get inklings that they're there or a feeling. So there's a wide range of having that experience. And I do think that over time, the more you do it, the stronger you develop it. The first step I always tell people is to build a space for them in your home. I have here in my studio, I have a few different ancestors in a sort of altarpiece. And I'm sure that that's pretty much across the board internationally, a practice of readers who connect with spirit energy or ancestral energy to make an altar of some form for those people, feed them in some way. I set out oranges for my grandfather. I light incense to them daily and remind them that you are open to connecting, and they will start that will start to come in. I think that that's going to start to come in on its own the more you do that. And talk to them, when nobody's around, I guess, for some people, I'll talk to my ancestors when people are around. I don't care. But you can openly talk to them and ask them questions, and it will help you organize a lot of things in your own life, because they do see things from a different perspective that we don't have the ability to connect to.
Right.
Excuse me.
No, that's fantastic. I think the building an altar is, as you rightly pointed out, or at least a space for them, or something that is found almost universally.
Right.
We use the keyword here almost, but definitely found across traditions. And the idea of building that connection over time. What's fascinating about it is it's not just about building space. It's about building the attention too, right? Because time goes into that space. Dedication goes into it. You're working at it. It's like visiting a family member, right? You build that relationship. Papa New, you mentioned Martin Coleman's... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and if you don't know, find out the things that they like. Like I have an ancestor that I didn't know very well. He died when I was a baby. And so I asked my father what were his favorite things. And so I learned that he liked to always have a bowl of nuts around. He ate, cashews and almonds and any kind of nuts. And so I leave him nuts. And, so you learn more about them too, as you go through this process, which is quite nice.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always tell clients that you start off with a glass of water, but eventually you find out that maybe they're a tea drinker. So it's now a cup of tea or a cup of coffee. So you learn what they like and you add their preferences. Papa, you mentioned Martin Coleman's book, Communing with the Dead, which is a phenomenal book. Could you speak a little bit about that?
Well, and what I liked about his book, and you already touched on this, it is this process of, setting up space, creating, calling in your ancestors. But even then, it's still a portion of test. Partly because, your ancestors know who you are. Even if you never got to meet them, or there's those that have been way back in the early days, they know you. You are an extension of them. So as a whole, as a collection, they want the best for you. And at the same time, when you start to become, recognize that nobody can take your connection from your ancestors away from you. That connection is there through your blood. And what you're doing when you start to set up a space or to spend that time, it is more to focus on that connection that is already there. And even then, it is depending on your space and the spirits of the land you reside on, there might be some spirits that come in to say, yeah, sure, I'm Aunt so-and-so, and you got a test, because you don't know for sure until you get that familiar with that connection. And it just takes a little bit of time. Be easy on yourself. Talk with family members who are still alive. Learn the stories that you can. And even those that, you know, there's the generation that knew of those people are gone, still call out to them and invite them. It's like, I want to know your story. I want to come to me and help me find about you. And but Martin Coleman's book is just a very phenomenal book that really helps people to get started. And don't expect results right away. I think it's, if I remember correctly, it's like a 3 or so month process of building up. And I always equate that to, like, people, if you go out to start working out, you go into the gym for the very first time, do not expect to lift 500 pounds or whatnot or get totally shredded.
Right.
You got to work into it.
Definitely.
This is really,
what are some
really
ways that
point.
You use to ask those questions? Personally, I always go back to pendulums because it's such an easy, direct way.
Mm-hmm.
Another way is there's a Chinese practice called moon blocks that will ask yes and no questions. And I can talk about that a little more if you guys are unfamiliar. But what are the ways that you would use to test the spirit to get that interface where you can ask yes and no? I mean, the classic, I guess, would be the Ouija board. What do you use personally?
I am one for pendulums. I'm one for pendulums. Spirit boards and such, I like to use them from time to time, but I find that the pendulum helps me because I set up my pendulum. It only moves when it's a yes. That's it. I keep it very simple. You know, I don't got times like this way is yes, this way is no. It's like, no, it's just move. But I've been just learning to also listen. And that is something real quick I want to say. If you do set up a space to, you know, you can talk to them. You can lay out all your problems, how your day going, but sit there and listen. I had one client that set up a space,
sure.
And it's like they're not spending enough time. It's like they're giving their problems, like, okay, got to go, bye. No, sit there, listen.
That's a really good point. I tell clients that one of the ways to kind of build the listening skill is to keep a journal. This is an important practice for ensuring that you start to develop the ability to distinguish between your voice and the voice of spirit, your intuition, and what spirit is telling you. Mm-hmm. It's particularly good if you extend that to a dream journal, because what this does is it develops what I call the psychic vocabulary. You start to write down what your dreams are. You start to journal, and you effectively say, okay, I dreamt about this, and then this happened, or I asked my ancestor this question, and then I dreamt of a rose. This starts to develop the language that you are going to need in order to commune with your ancestors. Not everyone hears. Some people see. Some people smell. This is an important component of the work, is recognizing that you have different skills, different senses that are going to be naturally inclined towards this work. And so journaling, and you've got to be very rigorous with it too. I tell people, don't fall into the trap of deluding yourself. This is an area where you can very easily convince yourself of anything. So this is why the journaling builds in accountability. Be honest, be clear, write down what it is that you thought you saw and what happened, you know, a week later. Keep it all in that journal. No one's going to see it. It's yours. Be as honest as you can with yourself. And you'll find that it actually does work very, very well. And it will help you to develop the ability to discern. It takes time. And that's the key here. It takes time. No one.
It does. And I
want
to say real quick,
alter.
I'm so sorry to interrupt.
No, please.
Sorry. Real quick, it's just a thought, too. Remember that you have ancestors that do come from a time that is very different than today. So communication may be different.
Yeah.
The way they express things are going to be different. And that's also that element that part of that taking time to distinguish.
Absolutely. And Dr. Jeremy Weiss mentions here, the presence of various smells can indicate spirits. Rose scent is famous. This is true. Scent in particular is associated with spirits. And so smelling is not uncommon. And I think Lovely Dove earlier mentioned that she or they smelled cigarette smoke, and that can be a scent from a spirit. So that's not uncommon. Scent is one way that you can know that a spirit is present, knowing that they communicate in different ways. That's also very important. Maybe a spirit will manifest as a phantom spell, or maybe as a sight, or maybe as a sound. This is where the kind of skill of journaling develops. And the other component is to stick to one type of divinatory practice that you find useful. The pendulum was brought up here. I think that's a great, great tool. You find something that works for you, and you stick with it. Or maybe it's cards. Maybe it's the pendulum. Maybe it's flipping a coin. Maybe it's a variety of different things. But you find something that works, and you use it. You use it with the spirit, and you trust. This is how we're going to have a conversation. This is how we're going to talk. Maybe it's the spirit board. You're going to commune through this. But again, you've got to work at it over time. Okay, we've talked a little bit about sort of the developing the ability to hear. We've talked a little bit about the tools needed to do so. Let's kind of get down into some of the brass tacks here. We don't have a caller signed up, so we're actually going to extend our conversation through that very first call, so we've got more time to discuss. When we say alter, it's one word that we all three of us have used here so far, and we've talked about a space. What does that look like? Because they do look very different. They can be very sparse. They can be kind of elaborate. And culture plays a big role here. What cultural background you have, and again, not all cultures come from a tradition of working with the dead. But in the Hoodoo tradition, a common way of establishing an altar is generally some type of white cloth. In the South, we saw a lot of white doilies, some type of family Bible, cups of water, and photos. Those are generally considered the standards on any sort of ancestor altar you would find in traditional Southern Hoodoo. What are some other things that either of you, will start with Papa Nu, and then we'll go to Stuart. What are some things that you put on your altar or that you recommend clients do so?
You know, I always check as when I first learned about the idea of ancestral veneration, you know, I was Catholic, so there was form of it, but it's not to this point when I read about these altars and whatnot. Now, back in the day, I used to live in a studio, and there wasn't much space, that, you know, and I always read these things where it's like, oh gosh, it's like, don't have an altar in your bedroom and all that stuff. So, I did start off really simple, and it depends on clients. I get clients that don't have much space. You can, and this is something I did when I started, was to have a white cloth. I had a little container that had a rock, two rocks, one that was smooth and curvy that represented all the feminine aspects of all my ancestors, one that was angular and jagged for all the masculine energies of, or, you know, masculine side of my ancestries. And these were my representation for, like, the ascended ancestors. They've been around for so long that there's, like, no judgment per se. And that whole ritual in and of itself of bringing out the box, opening it up, bringing out the cloth, what became a ritual in and of itself. And it was very simple. Mm. That's all I had for the longest time. And so I'm one to always say, you know, keep it simple. But as I got into have a little bit more space, I did obtain items from certain family members that passed away. And so I do have these as a focal point. But I always will have water there, and I still have those stones there representing So the Son of the Ancestors. But I just keep mine very simple.
That's beautiful. How about you, Stuart?
Well, my my inclination is more dramatic, I guess. And my background is in fine art, so everything becomes a piece of artwork in my world. So my studio or office is kind of an extended altar. When you look around the whole place, it becomes the whole place has magical working stuff going on. There is a specific focal point on a shelf, and you walk in, I'm standing at that shelf now, where I have multiple ancestors. Altar is not the word I would use, but it's the easiest word to communicate it, and I think that's why I used it before. And the things that are there that are different, I think, are from Chinese influences. So I'm always burning incense there, and you burn incense in threes. So always three sticks for ancestral connection in the Chinese tradition. And the cloth that I have is not a white cloth. It's an old Chinese silk cloth that was my grandmother's. So there's that connection. If it was theirs, then it's stronger for me anyway. For my grandfather, I also have a peacock feather because where three of my ancestors are buried, peacocks live. So there's that. There's little things like that that connect, that I know that they would recognize and I recognize connects to them. I also have old coins. There's a lot of stuff. Singing bowls, here you go. So as part of my ritual, I will light incense and then I will ring the bowls as sort of a hello. You know, I'm starting work now. That's how that works. I think that covers everything. Water. I also have bowls of water. And elements. You had mentioned having round objects and then rough objects. I really like that as well. I always make sure I have represented the, you know, earth, air, fire, and water, but also I use the Chinese side. So on a Chinese altar, you always have water, earth, fire, metal, and I'm missing one. Earth, water, fire, metal, and wood. Those are the five Chinese elements. And so those are represented in some way on all the altar spaces that I have.
Oh, that's interesting. And as you rightly noted, very artistic. I think one of the components of ancestor altars is that it is a dialogue between you and the ancestor. It's not just a random space, but it is a shared space between you and spirit. And so it's going to change and look different for different people. There will be some kind of cultural guidelines, I think, certainly. But also, I think there are lots of areas of experimenting and figuring it out. There's times where you'll put something on an altar and be like, oh, nope, that definitely doesn't go there. You'll feel it. You'll know. You're like, yeah, that was this. Something is off here. And there'll be other times where you put something on there and it's like the heavens sing, right? It's perfect. It's exactly where it needs to be. And that's you understanding that you were building a connection with your ancestor. One thing that we haven't discussed that I think it is important in any type of work that involves the dead, necromancy, and mediumship, you do have to have a strong spiritual constitution. We've talked about how this work can be draining. We've talked about how this work can certainly be tricky. And so a strong connection with some type of guardian is important here. Before you dive into ancestor work. Make sure you're right with your creator, God, whatever force or power that you, find spiritual succor from. It is important to do so. So I do tell clients that as they're developing their ancestor work, they should develop a practice of prayer or meditation or whatever it is that allows them to build that connection with something higher than themselves. It's a way of attuning yourself. It's a way of kind of centering and grounding yourself, and also gives you the spiritual kind of protection and fortitude you need to kind of delve into these realms. Not that you're going to open yourself up to demons or whatnot, but, you know, there does need to be some type of spiritual backbone or spine here that's got your back. Would you both agree to that? And are there ways that you develop that skill or recommendation that you have for clients as they get started?
I completely agree.
Same here. It's with that time that you're doing the work, your prayers, you're just doing the work, you are also building up a level of a spiritual authority, if you will. And like for me, with being, Catholic, I'm through the sacraments, like it or not, I've gone through the sacraments. So, that's there. So I do tap into the Catholic part of me when I am working with spirits, because a lot of times I will, in my prayers, I will say something like, in the name of God, the Father, God, the Son, God, the Holy Ghost, through these three names, I call upon you, and then I'll say it's a person. So I'm only calling upon that person through these three names. Only that person can come through. Anything else tries to come through, you got to go through the Trinity. Have fun.
I like
that. Nice. I have another sort of, before I light the incense to the ancestors, I have candles that I light for other things, and then incense that I light to a higher power, because that gets its respect first, and then I go to the ancestors. But the other, the bigger thing for me is daily meditation. So I'll sit and meditate every day. And usually when I'm first getting to my office or when I first wake up are the strongest times.
Building that practice. And see, this is what's interesting is this is a theme that we've been developing throughout this conversation, is that this is a practice, it's a routine. And it doesn't sound glamorous sometimes when we think of magic. We think of fantastic spells and complex rituals and all these different kind of Hollywood-esque images spring to mind for people. But a great deal of it is a spiritual practice. It's something that you develop over time. It's something that you takes dedication, that requires you putting in the effort. And part of this is what develops what you can ask and what you can do with the ancestors. The more time you spend with them, the more time you develop that connection, the stronger your answers will be, the stronger insights you'll get, the more likely they will be to help out in a particular instance, whether it's an issue of, hey, I need help with this money matter, hey, I need help with this health matter, etc. They're more likely to do so. It's harder if you randomly start, you just start randomly and then go, hey, I need $20,000 by next month. Now, the ancestors aren't going to be particularly inclined to dive right in and help you, especially if they've been kind of watching you over your entire life and you haven't really been giving them any attention until you need that. Right? So there's a practical reason why. You're not just developing your own skills and abilities. You're also developing a relationship. You're developing the friendship. These spirits aren't a slot machine. They're real. So they have their own proclivities and personalities and inclinations. And being able to recognize that in order to kind of build a rapport is going to help you in your own kind of sphere of influence. You're increasing it every time you spend a little bit of time with your ancestors. And that's the other thing, is that you're not just doing, you know, you don't just set up a space and forget it. You build a weekly practice. I tell people every Sunday or every Monday, they're really great days. Commune, spend some time. Or maybe it's a daily practice. Every morning before you get up and go to work, that's what you do. You spend a little bit of time making sure that the ancestor altar is cleaned up, that you placed a fresh cup of water, that you light that incense, that you give fruit, etc. And that's the thing that you'll discover. Like, ancestors want things. Like, hey, make sure you put a cup of coffee out for me. And so you put out the cup of coffee. You know?
Right. And I will say real quick, you know, setting up the, like, an ancestral altar and really focusing on that awareness of that connection to that family tree, that tree of your ancestors, you then start to become aware of even the healing that may be needed within that tree.
Mm.
I've been working with a client that has, you know, alcoholism in their family. And now, of course, there is the psychological element there. There's the physical elements that are there that can cause these. But I have been finding that there seems to be this trend showing up in future generations because this element was never healed for this person that passed on. And so becoming more and more aware, you may, you know, and you don't have other family members doing this type of work, it may come down to you to help with the healing process that's needed for some of those ancestors that need it. And that's why we pray for them. I mean, we might have Uncle Joe, who was just a very unfortunate, unhappy person and hated everyone. We don't really quite call upon them for the help we need for this, but we still pray for them and hope their spirits evolve and grow.
Oh, yeah, that's a very good point. And I think that brings up our kind of a final conversation, if you will, the last few minutes, is the role of spiritual elevation. That is the elevating of ancestors. There is a spiritual benefit for ancestors here as well. So let's talk a little bit about this. Is what do the ancestors get from us? In addition to kind of offerings, what is it that they get from us? We'll start with Stuart, and then we'll kind of go to you, Papa Newton, and we'll wrap it up.
Wow, what do they get from us? I don't often consider that angle, and I really like it. It's like giving them a phone cord back to Earth. It's like, I mean, I think it's respect. It's energy for them I don't presume to understand what that side is like at all, but I know that there's something. I know that there's otherwise why would it work? That's a great question. I'm going to have to think on that one. I like that question.
No, that's fine. Papa Lou?
From my observation so far, it's, you know, to not only is it to give them honor for what they have done in their lifetime, because, I mean, I've had some grandparents that were through the Dust Bowl, you know, when that took place, the Depression and all that stuff. And they did everything they could so your family line could continue. So it's just that honor and that memory. But it also, you know, those little things of when we offer, like, the food that they enjoy, the what they used to drink, or even just little items they once had, also gives them that little energetic, you know, essence to their being. And it just helps to keep things going further too. Line is gone, who's going to remember their story?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, in addition to being their link to the living, right, to the living world, as well as the sort of things that they remember fondly, the cup of tea that they enjoyed, the sweet that they liked, the chocolate that they enjoyed, etc. There is very clearly, particularly within certain traditions within hoodoo, the idea that the ancestors get elevated. The ancestors receive something in turn from us, whether it is through our prayers, through the light. There's a reason why candles and water are so commonly used in this tradition, and that's because both are seen as elevating the ancestor.
Yeah.
There's a whole tradition, for example, in Virginian conjure, of ghost laying, of using water in particular to cool the spirit of an ancestor or the dead that is hot or angry or frustrated. Mm. And so there is this element that, that ancestors in turn get something from us. Just as we gain insight from them, so too are they elevated in their relationship with us, in our prayers for them. And so what this kind of comes down to at the end of the day is that this is a deeply spiritual practice. Spirit being the sort of pun here is that this is not a mechanistic thing. This isn't even transactional. And I think it's important for people to understand that. A lot of times, and I think this is the kind of drawback of the sort of modern convenience of the internet to some extent, is that while these traditions have become popularized, and it's great, sometimes people view this as a sort of vending machine that you just ask, you know, oh, you know, tomorrow I need to get that job. So you know what? I'm going to light that candle to Uncle Jimmy and make sure that Uncle Jimmy gets me that job. Or, you know, in the same way that the saints, I think you can attest to this, Papa, is that the, some of the popularity of the saints has become almost transactional. And that's slightly uncomfortable for anyone who was born or raised within that tradition, who recognizes that there is a give and take, and there's an honesty in that give and take. But at the end of the day, that this is much more than a transactional relationship. This is about building a spiritual rapport. And that gets lost in translation, which is why I think this conversation was such a fun conversation and a much-needed discussion. So we do thank you, Stuart, for bringing this topic to our panel. We actually had a little bit of a longer discussion here, which is quite fantastic. We don't always get a chance to kind of extend our conversation and keep it going. The panel always seems, you know, a bit truncated. So this was quite
we
nice.
Could
thank
go
you
on
both
and on.
For your. I know we could go on.
Yeah,
and
thanks
on,
for having me. This has been great.
Yeah, we do have a caller, so we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back to our caller. Hopefully, we can have Stuart come back at the end. We're going to have him do a really interesting free spell. He said it's a little bit different, so this is going to be exciting. Be sure to stay tuned. We're going to take a quick break, come back, do a caller, and then free spell at the end.
Oh. Oh. Jeremy?
Oh, sorry. this is the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with your host, Conjure Man Ali, and guest host, Papa Newt, and this week's special guest, Stuart Palm. Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com, and by the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org. And also by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service, the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Now it's time to go to the phones and talk with our next client. Our caller is Tamara, calling from area code 6619 in San Diego. Tamara, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Well, I understand, have not had a reading about this situation yet, have you?
No.
From Contraband Ali? Okay. Well, Tamara's situation is a little bit complicated. She writes in, I have been with my boyfriend for 4 years and recently found out that I am pregnant. We are both older and have been making plans for our future, but a baby wasn't one of them. I want to have a baby, but he's dead set against it, to the point I don't even know if we're together at this point. And he's very angry because she hasn't terminated the pregnancy. Tamara would like to know, will he eventually come around and work on the future that they have been planning all this time together?
Thanks, Dr. Jeremy. That was thank you very much. Let me ask you a couple questions, Tamara, before I get started. Now, I'm going to do your first reading, followed by Stuart, and then we're going to have Papa Newt come in and give you some root work recommendations.
Okay.
First, roughly how old are you?
41.
And is he roughly the same age?
4 years younger.
4 years younger, okay. And what sign of the zodiac are you?
Taurus.
And what sign is he?
December 9th, I believe, Sagittarius.
Sagittarius, yeah. Okay, so, that makes a little bit of sense. I pulled a few cards here, and they tell us the situation. Now, Sagittarius and Taurus can make pretty good friends, and they do have a connection. There is tensions between them, some very clear ones.
Mm-hmm.
Their temperaments don't quite match up. In addition to the fire and earth component, one is very stable and the other one is a little bit more restless. Now,
mm-hmm.
the first card that we have here is the Six of Wands. The Six of Wands is the announcement. This is a person riding on a horse with a staff. They've got a wreath above them that is generally a sign of victory, a sign of good news to come. This is good news. It's unexpected
mm-hmm.
news. It's come out of nowhere, but it is good news. At the end of the day, it is news for you. And while he may not be happy about it, it is fundamentally about your body, your autonomy, more so than what he wants. And that's very important to understand here, is that this is a message for you, and it comes with glad tidings. But those glad tidings don't necessarily translate to, hey, we're going to be a happy couple. For the next card that we have is the Tower, and the Tower is the present. This is where you are now. For him, it is like a lightning bolt has struck, and it has kind of brought everything down. It was unexpected. It is upending. His life seems to be going in a direction he did not want it to go to, and he was entirely unprepared for it. This is startling for him, and it has made him angry, and it has brought out a little bit darker side to him. This is a Sagittarius that is afraid of being hobbled or constrained or kept from finding, pursuing his own path. So be aware that that's where the circumstance is right now. It is a problem. It is one that if you see, if you were hoping for in relationship with this guy, then where he is right now should be a warning sign. It tells you that this is a person who's not ready to step up in the way that you had hoped for. Now, does that mean that all things are over? The card that we get in the future is the King of Swords. This is a person who is not going to warm up, but who will step up. He's not gone entirely. He will be in your life, and he will certainly play a role, but it will be done begrudgingly. It will be done not with enthusiasm or open arms. If you want him to embrace the situation enthusiastically, you will need to use magic in order to turn this. And the good news is that magic can help in this matter. It's not going to suddenly make you guys into a happy married couple, but there is an opportunity here for him to see, all right, things aren't as bad as they are. I can make this do. I can come around to it. And we see this in the Wheel of Fortune. It will take time. It will require magical work on your part. As things stand, his state of mind, his emotions may not entirely lessen, but he'll come to terms with it. He'll be like, all right, this is it. I don't have much choice here. And he will step up in certain ways. You'll find that he'll still come around. There'll still be contact. You may even get some type of support from him. But if you want more, if you want something more meaningful here, then what's required is magical work on your part. It's not an easy path forward. It's one that will come with difficulty, but the difficulty is from his side. And that's something that you need to be aware of. You've been given this news. You can decide whatever you want to do with it. But note that the tower and the hurt and the sort of, that's all on him. That's the mess he's bringing here. And you don't have to accept that. You don't have to accept that that is where you need to be. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Yes.
So, not the best of cards. Not the cards perhaps you were hoping for. Not an indication of, you know, hey, we're going to get happily married tomorrow. But this is a situation that can be worked with. All hope is not lost. That's my reading here. It looks like we've lost Stuart, unfortunately, and I don't know if he's calling back in, but if he does call back in, we'll pick him up. What we'll do is we'll have Papa Newt start with his rootwork recommendation, and then when Stuart comes in, he'll jump in and give some rootwork recommendation, and I will as well. So we'll turn this over to Papa Newt. Papa Newt? I think you might be on
goodness, I'm talking, I'm muted, and goodness, here we go. We got this. All right. So, as Ollie was saying, that, you know, this anger and such is their own, and that is something that is going to be very important, because in my mind, top priority, you know, if you're choosing to keep this child, the well-being of this child should be top priority. Some elements with that anger, I would suggest, I mean, there's only going to be so much I want you to do on him. And the biggest thing is to make sure that you get him to calm down a little bit so he can start to step up and start helping out. And one that I am one to work with is just like a 7-11 holy oil, anointing his photo, reading like Psalms 45. It's mainly for like to calm anger between a spouse and such, but that is still something to help with the situation, so they can see that, you know, they can take care of this situation, but also still do a little bit. They have to give up some things, but I mean, that's just part of bringing a child into this world, but doesn't mean that all is to end. Another element, if to keep things sweet, you may consider doing a little bit of a sweetening working, putting in such elements, you may want to put in just a little elements of elements to control. It's a little licorice, a little rosemary for women's strength. But also you do want to put in little things like cinnamon, little things, five-finger grass, so they do help. Now, with that anger, I mean, sweetening liquid honey is great, but I'm feeling more of using just the powdered sugar, because it's just that softness to the sweetness that we want, just to make sure that that they keep coming, that they keep with their responsibilities, and also with time, hope get things to sweeten up between you two. And this is something that you can work, praying with candles on top of it, anointing them with oil, just to keep things going. And do we have Stuart back yet, Holly?
We don't, but I do have some. Yes, sorry. We're having technical difficulties, but that's okay. We're going to continue on and soldier on. Were you finished with the root worker recommendation? Because I do have something I wanted to jump in here.
Yes, please jump on in.
Yeah. So one of the things that I highly recommend that you do is to start working towards you and your own health as well. And that's a very important component of this, is don't let yourself get so wrapped up in what this guy is bringing and his kind of chaotic emotions here, because that'll have an impact on you and your health. So one thing that I always recommend for people is that when you get any type of sonogram or imaging done, then place that within a picture frame and keep it safe on a surface in your home. Anoint this with blessing oil and light white candles before. You can even fix the picture. And what you do is you take an envelope in the back, you place flax seeds, you put rosemary, you put a pinch of sugar, and you place this into the back of the picture frame, close the picture frame, anoint it all with blessing oil, and then pray over it. Call upon your ancestors, your female ancestors in the past, who will guide and assist you here. Call upon your higher creator, your God, whatever entity that you reach out with, and keep that going the entire time that you're pregnant. That's going to be your protection altar. It's going to be your health altar. Any type of paperwork that you get from the baby, whatnot, keep it all on there. Keep it all in one space. Make sure that you keep your prayers going there and keep that attention on it. You know, work it once a week on Sundays, which is fantastic for families and children. Anyways, put the Sun Tarot card there, which I think is a fantastic image to work with. We do have Stuart here. We're going to make him live. Let's see if this works. Stuart, are you there?
I'm
wonderful.
Here. Am I there?
Back. You are. You are here. We unfortunately skipped your reading and went to root work advice. But if you had any insight from your reading to share about this situation, feel free to jump in now. Otherwise, we can continue with root work.
Yeah, sure. I'll just do this real quick. I didn't hear all of what was said as I was knocked off, and I am in on the other side of the planet, so these things happen. But I pulled three oracle cards and one tarot for you, and the tarot card is very telling. The tarot card is the High Priestess. I think you need to go with what you need for you on this, and so if the child is what you want, then I would follow that path. The oracle cards I have are the Key, the Moon, and the Cornucopia. And the Cornucopia is very telling, because that shows that things are going to turn out good in the end. Trust your intuition. Trust your heart on this. The Moon shows us connections. Not like the Tarot Moon, which can be negative. The Oracle Moon is very positive, and intuitive. Trust your intuition and your unconscious on this. And the key shows us that you will unlock what you need. Your struggles now, but you will get to the place where the water settles, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Thank you for that, Stuart. Yeah, I think our readings are aligned here, is that in the long run, things are going to work out quite well. The key here is going to be the child and you and whatever decisions you make. That's going to be more important than anything else. So that's where the majority of the focus should be at. And I think doing magical work in regards to that, highly recommend house cleansing. Whenever there's a situation in which, one partner isn't emotionally in the right place, they can bring that emotional negativity and chaos with them. So it's important to kind of cleanse the house, Chinese floor wash, wash the house from top to bottom, back to front, and then take some peace water and sprinkle that around the house. Peace water will help to settle the energies, will help to settle the spirits there, ensure that you're in the right, comfortable place for whatever it is that you need to do. Any other recommendations in regards to root work or spiritual work from Papa Newt or Stuart?
Well, because there is a child being brought in, and we had the discussion, necromancy and such, and it got into talking with about ancestors, do call in your ancestors of those that were mothers, even those that, just to have that support. And I'm also, from a Catholic perspective, I'm one to also call upon one of the greatest mothers of a Catholic tradition, which would be Mother Mary. And I do like to especially work with Motherwort when working with Mary, just to bring in that protection for you and your child as well, along with what Ollie has recommended.
Okay.
Oh, that's
sounds
fantastic.
Great. Thank
yeah,
you.
Mother Wort is great here. Look, you're at the end of the day, don't be particularly worried about this Sagittarius. He is going to stomp. He's going to be angry. He's going to throw a little bit of a fit. He's eventually going to come around. Maybe not in the way that you would hope, and maybe very begrudgingly, but he will eventually kind of make his way back. It's far more important to focus on your situation and making sure you're in the right state and that you do right by you, more so than anything else. Everything else will click into place. So just bear that in mind. You're not in as cornered of a place as you might think. You have far more options. You have far more good things ahead of you than bad things. It is tricky, and it isn't exactly the answer you were hoping for, but hopefully we have given you some guidance in this particular matter. We do thank you for entrusting us with your situation. Call us back and let us know how things turned out. We wish you all the best.
Thank you so much.
Well. All right. We're going to take a quick break where we're going to have a network announcement, and we're going to have Dr. Jeremy come in and lead us on to our free spell with Stuart Palm.
And now
the LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie, Sundays 3 to 4:30; The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6; The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, Fridays 1 to 2; and Blue Flag Root Radio with Lady Muse, Fridays 7 to 8. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Okay, so am I supposed to just jump in and give my spell, or would I lose you guys? What happened?
Go ahead. We'll now do our free spell with our guest, and we'll go from there. Take away, Stuart.
All right. Thank you very much. So what I'm going to describe here is a offering that I do with clients who want to connect with a spirit energy, that want to connect almost always with an ancestor who has passed. And they have a question, a concern, or something they want to communicate with that person. And I do this in such a way that they don't need to tell me what they want to communicate. This can remain being a personal message, but it allows them to have to open a portal, so to speak, to the other side. And so the first thing that I ask them to do is to write that question down and in as much detail as they can, make it very clear. I talk to them about how to write a good question in terms of being direct as for what information you're trying to get in response from the question, to be positive in the way that you form this question, so that it's not a confusing question for the energy and the spirit to understand. You want to be very clear. Once they write the question, I then get a large metal bowl, and the question is folded up, and added to that is master key oil. I usually use 3 drops of master key oil, and I wrap into this bundle flash paper, which is I don't know how often you guys if you guys use this, but in spell work I find it very effective. It's a paper that burns rapidly, and then we light this in the bowl. Now, this is something that you need to, you know, learn. If you're going to use the flash paper, you don't have to use the flash paper, but it helps to make this more spectacular, and I think that is important in some spell work. But if you're going to do it, you practice with it so you understand that it's, you know, highly volatile thing, and you're in a controlled environment, and you have a fire extinguisher in case things go wrong. Always be safe. But you're going to burn the whole bundle. And as you're doing this, you're going to sort of meditate and focus on creating that connection. Picture that person, make an altar to them before you take on this task, which could just be a stick of incense and a photograph, but make it personal. Make it your connection with that person. You burn the bundle so that it becomes ashes. As you do this, it's important, I think, to focus on what colors come out of the fire, because this will help you understand where they lie on the answer to the question or what this, how this connection is being made. And every time that I've done this, the people that we burn the fire for, the colors that come out make sense. Once this is done, we take all the ashes, we put them in the envelope. Because you're going to use that envelope to connect to them in your own dream state. You put the ashes in the envelope. Usually I seal the envelope and I create a sigil of connection to that person. If you don't know how to make a sigil, look up creating a sigil. That's an entire episode in its own. But I usually make a sigil that I write onto the envelope. And then that night, before you go to bed, before you go to sleep, you take a glass of water, you fill it half full, you put the envelope like a bridge over the top of the cup. You don't want to cover the cup completely. You want to cover it sort of, the opening is still passes to air, but the envelope can set on top of the cup, if that makes sense. And then in your dream that night, you will meet that person on a bridge, and they will answer your question. I have had only amazing experiences with this process. After the experience, you take the envelope, you open it up, and you plant those ashes in a tree that you know will last a long time, either with a new plant, a tree or plant that you know is a long-lasting plant, like, you know, not something that you know is going to die soon or doesn't have a long life to it. You want to add it to the soil or plant a new plant to grow that you can nourish for a long time, or you add it to the ground of a tree that's important to you or the ancestor, but you get what I mean. And that's it.
Oh, wow. This is a fantastic, fantastic fruit spell. Is there like an offering or a thank you that you do, or is that the burial? Is that thank you enough?
The burial
of the ashes.
Thank you, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's fantastic. This is great. Is this a working of your own devising, or is this something that was taught to you? Yeah, this is really great. And you were right, unique in its own way compared to kind of any other free spell that we've had here. This is something that someone who's just starting out can do as well, I'm assuming, or would you say it's best if they first develop the kind of ancestor altar, developed a connection, or where, at which stage do you think that they can participate in this?
I would make an altar first and give that some time until you feel that you've made the connection. However, some people, especially if it's been like a 6-month period since the person died, some people will have already that strong connection. I usually walk people through this, and I do the burning, and there's more ritual involved when I do it. I'll play gongs, and they will light incense as well to that person. We create a little altar for them as we burn the paper. So there can be more involved. But once it's in the envelope, the rest of it is their process. So then it's that, you know,
oh,
they,
that's
they
really...
go and finish.
So you actually do this with clients and walk them through it. And, oh, that's really neat. That's actually super neat. I love that. I love that. And then there's a process where they kind of take over.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool. Thank you for this free spell. I'm sure that everyone listening in is enjoyed it as much as me and Papa Newt did here.
I think I'm ordering flash paper now.
Yeah, no, I had not considered flash paper for something like this. So this is really,
neat. Thing that I've experienced. I'll have a woman who green was very important for her mother, and the fire turned green. And so that is very common. These colors become important.
Oh, that's very cool. Very cool. Thank you again for this freestyle and for really a fun discussion. We're going to have Dr. Jeremy come in and give us a quick outro, and then we're going to come back and say goodbye in a myriad different ways.
Thank you, Conjure Man Ollie, and to our guest co-host, Papa Newt. And thank you, Stuart Palm of StuartPalm.com in Hong Kong, for being our special guest this week. We invite you to join us next week with our special guest, Angela Marie Horner from the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers. She's from Santa Rosa, California, bringing us the topic of death and mourning. Once again, we've come to the end of another Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. You can find Conjure Man Ollie at theconjureman.com in Mission Viejo, California, and Papa Newt at papanewt.com in Omaha, Nebraska. I'm your guest announcer, Dr. Jeremy, joining you from Seattle, Washington. The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and the shows are available in archive via luckymojo.com/radioshow.html. For all of us at Lucky Mojo, I'd like to thank you for being here and invite you to tune in once again next week at the same time when you will hear the familiar strains of the Memphis Jug Band playing the Jug Band Waltz. Thanks, everyone, and goodbye.
Thanks, Dr. Jeremy, for being a great announcer. Thank you, Papa Newt, for joining us as guest co-host, and for Stuart Palm for a great topic and a great guest. Thank you all.
Thanks, everybody.